Hey everyone, you're listening to PDX Food Stories. I'm your host, Mary Crow, and today on the podcast I have my friend Samantha Chulik, who is a PR stud muffin. She recently left her role at Lane PR here in town to the exciting new position as head of PR for Stumptown. After we talk to her, Sarah and Dirk and I explore probably one of the oddest yet most familiar products at the farmer's market, kohlrabi. You've seen it. It's round, it's kind of nubby, it's green and purple. You don't quite know what to do with it. We have some ideas. Hope you enjoy the show.
All right, let's do it.
All right, welcome to PDX Food Stories. On the show today, my good friend, Samantha Chulik of Lane PR. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited that you're here.
Me too. This is fun. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, because we are going to talk about our favorite thing, which is food, eating and drinking.
All the things that I love.
All the things. So to get started, you work in Lane. And
yes.
You do food PR.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, like, before I got to a place in my career where I was working with agencies, like, I thought PR was literally like you just write press releases.
Right.
But that's not what you do.
No.
So tell us what you do.
It runs the gamut from everything from marketing, definitely as part of our job, to event production, to press releases. And really, it's kind of all encompassing in terms of communications.
Right.
So we, on a daily basis, will write pitches, write press releases, conduct phone interviews for our clients. Prep for events, do an event,
right.
You know, travel all over the world to have our clients meet with, you know, top tier media, whether that's, you know, Time down in, you know, in Birmingham or up in New York or in Austin. It's a really, really fun, fast paced job. And I'm thrilled to be doing it.
That's awesome. Who are some of your clients right now that you work with?
So right now I'm lucky enough to work with Travel Oregon, which is kind of
so awesome.
A massive and amazing account. Obviously, it's travel-based, but within travel, you get to do food, bev,
yeah.
That whole world.
So I feel like you are my go-to whenever we're driving. I'm like, okay, we're going to drive through this town. We've been here, and what should I eat?
And I probably have in Oregon. We're lucky enough to go on trips with the Travel Oregon team all over the state. And for me, fairly new to Oregon, I moved here about 4 years ago. It was such a great introduction to the state. It's massive and amazing. And there's so many things to do.
Right.
And there's so many things to eat and drink and explore. So Travel Oregon has to be just one of my absolute favorite accounts to work with. Not only, you know, the people amazing that work there. They're so proud to be Oregonians and work for the state. But it's just it's fun.
Yeah,
how do you not want
to? It looks like a lot.
Spread the good word about Oregon,
right?
So yeah, I'm really lucky to work with them, and then I work primarily in the beverage sector. So I work with international beverage brands like Lillet, which is one of my all time favorite aperitifs.
Me too, and their events look like so much fun.
Yeah, so that's kind of the cool thing about PR. Not only do you do the traditional PR, which is that outreach and the pitching and press releases and media alerts and advisories. But Lillet is an event-based PR account. So we've been able to do events partnering with fashion designers up and down the West Coast all summer.
Awesome.
People like Isabel Marant and Malia Mills. And we're going to San Francisco at the end of this month to be with Margaret Elizabeth, who's a fantastic jewelry designer up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really fun to bring Lillet to consumers and kind of these VIP consumers that are not only very into fashion, but they're also really interested to see what the new hip drink is and what people want to eat it with. You know, we're partnering with great caterers as well and different chefs in different markets where we feel really align well with our brand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been fun to bring Lillet to life this summer.
It looks like so much fun.
Oh my God, it's been amazing.
And so before PR,
yes,
tell us about your previous life.
Oh geez, there's so many iterations of my life. So I graduated from college. I went to SMU in Dallas, but I grew up in Los Angeles and I wanted to move back to LA as soon as I graduated. And I had a job at an entertainment agency, a talent agency, right off the gate. I had gotten it before I graduated and started there within a couple weeks of graduation. I literally drove right back from Dallas and hopped into a desk job. And it was awesome. I mean, talent agencies, if you've seen Entourage, it's very similar.
Is that true? It's funny. I feel like that's like when people ask if Portlandia is true. And my response is like, yes. It's not as exaggerated, but yes. And then 100%. You'll find yourself doing something and you'll have a flash to like a Portlandia scene. And you're like, oh my God,
I'm living that life.
I'm that person.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So Entourage, there's...
Yeah, that Ari Gold. Yes, there's definitely...
How many Ari Golds are there in the world?
A lot. But they're also, I mean... The agency I worked for, I have nothing but good things to say about. And we had great clients. We had great management firms we worked with, studios. It was a really wonderful way to get into the business world and to really learn the ins and outs of everything from accounting to mm-hmm. client management to strategy. It was amazing, and I loved it. But I realized I was there for almost 5 years. And towards the end, I realized that I wanted a little bit more balance in my life. And even though I was moving up the ranks quite quickly, but I wasn't getting any more time for myself.
Yeah.
I realized that I was in the office by, 6 a.m. I was out of there by 8 p.m. And then you'd have to go to read scripts and you'd have to go to meetings or dinners or drinks or whatever.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot of personal time.
Right.
And... I just realized that when I got home, my most favorite thing to do at like 9 o'clock at night was open a new bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that I really cherished. It became a real passion point for me. And so I just started trying as much wine as possible. And my parents had a place up in Santa Barbara near Wine Country. So I was able to go up there on the weekends and explore. And it became something. And I never expected it to be an actual... career change move, my wine passion, but it ended up being that. So in my fifth year, I ended up leaving the talent agency and switched to editorial.
Yeah.
Completely different. Major, I mean, granted, I was only 25 or 26, so
right.
It was, if you're going to move change, move jobs, like it's probably a good time to do it. And I was lucky enough that I literally just blind emailed different editors in Los Angeles and Santa Barbara and kind of any sort of city that I had some sort of house where I know I could move.
Right.
And Santa Barbara Magazine ended up looking for a contributor in their food and wine department.
That's awesome.
And I went and interviewed with the editor there and I got a job.
That's great.
So I quit the agency and moved up to Santa Barbara. And kind of started trying to figure out how I was going to make this all happen. Because for anyone wondering, editorial jobs pay nothing. It was a big shock for me coming from agency life.
Right.
And transitioning to that, needless to say, I moved in with my parents. That was an experience at 26.
Yeah. Oh, good times.
And then kind of shortly thereafter moving in with your parents, you realize you don't want to live with your parents.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Even though they're great.
Yes.
And I started applying to grad school because I realized that the best way for me to really have any sort of knowledge of what I was doing and really hone kind of in on my writing skills and kind of writing craft in general was to get some background in it.
Yeah.
So I applied to grad schools where I was there. I worked at a winery on the weekends. I worked 7 days a week and it was one of the best times of my life. It was super duper fun.
So you followed passion.
Completely.
Immersed yourself in it.
Yeah.
Which I think is... the best advice, like when people find what they're passionate about, especially if it's in food and craft and beverage, is there's no transitioning at a certain level. You have to get back to the ground floor.
100%.
And learn that business. Like to be authentic in your communication around it, you have to know like literally from everything from like how the floors are clean.
Yeah, totally.
To, washing wine glasses.
Yeah.
And
I definitely did that.
Yeah.
I definitely washed a bunch of wine glasses. I worked in everything from the tasting room to the barrel room to cleaning floors to cleaning glasses to interacting with customers. You never really learn something until you have to explain it to other people.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
There was something that was really interesting in having to dialogue with someone mm-hmm. about the tasting notes about the wine, because mm-hmm. It's literally a pop quiz anytime someone comes in.
For sure.
So it's like, well, there's Pinot Noir. What is this? You know, and yeah. you're having to react and respond.
Yeah.
And
so how did you handle people who knew more than you? Because that is, I mean, it's like my biggest fear. Not that I don't know things, because I know things.
Sure, but
like
totally.
When you're dialoguing with someone yeah. and they have like, they know it all.
Right. And then, you know, I think at that point, and this is definitely a PR skill as well, you let them know that they know it all. You know, like you you kind of just like them and let them
be the star of the show.
Yeah,
completely. Because that's what they're coming
they
in to
want
do.
That.
If they've read everything
exactly.
and know your wines better than you do,
yeah, exactly.
Let
so
them
you're,
have their day.
So if you don't want a competition, you want to be like, well, right. I know this and you know that. No, you want to be like, oh my gosh, sir, thank you so much. Like, that's amazing that you know that. Tell me more. Where did you read that? Can you tell me about this? Do you think about that? Like, you really play to them in that situation.
Pro tip.
Yeah. There you go. And it, you know, it doesn't go away with anything you do, whether
right,
that's in
right.
PR, you know, with dealing with any sort of editor, who most editors are definitely going to know more about the subject,
sure.
whatever it is,
yeah.
you know, because that's what, so it was a great experience.
And so all while wine, like your passion around local wineries is still kind of like
yeah.
bubbling and building, right?
Yeah. And I'm still drinking a ton.
Yeah.
you know, that's something, if there's a pro tip from me, if you want to get in the beverage world, it's find a wine shop that understands you, give them a budget, and every month order a case that they put together, like a mystery case.
Yeah, I love that advice. And so for someone who doesn't know how to get that relationship started,
mm-hmm.
like I'll give you an example. I was at Cider Summit Seattle this weekend, and I walked up to the guy and I was like, what should I drink? And he's like, he kind of like was like, you know, and then I realized,
right.
oh my God, he's been asked this question like 100 times today. And so I had to like pull back and be like, hey, I was sent over here because I heard your stuff mm-hmm. is really great. Can you please describe to me what you do and then
right.
help me pick one to drink? But mm-hmm. the first instinct as a consumer is to be like, dealer's choice.
Totally.
And then they're like, oh, lady, like, yeah. what do you like? Like, tell me what, you know, so to get a wine shop to understand you,
sure.
how would you go in and engage? What kind of questions would you ask to see if, you know, it's a good fit?
Totally. So my wine shop still to this day is Domaine LA in Los Angeles. So I've been a faithful consumer of theirs since I started at the talent agency post-college. So gosh, that's been 10 plus years. Jill Bernheimer is a rock star in the wine, and especially in the natural wine world. So for me, she did these great Sunday afternoon tastings.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of wine shops do this, right? They do like weekly tastings, whether they be on Friday nights or, you know, Sunday afternoons. So I would be kind of a loyal Sunday afternoon wine taster when I was living in Los Angeles. And I would go and learn. And I always found it was just really neat to, sometimes you'd have the producers
yeah.
there. Sometimes you'd have the distributor. And you'd learn a lot. So you would learn what questions to ask, kind
yeah,
of. And you'd hear,
just by
honestly,
listening.
You're listening to other
yeah.
people ask questions too, right? It's not a bad thing to be a listener.
That's a
and
really
see
good point.
How other people are approaching it and how they do it. And I honestly just kept asking Jill, regardless of, you know, I thought they may be stupid, but, and I also thought, I don't have a big budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to this woman being like, I would like to spend less than $20. Is that okay?
You right,
know?
Right.
And the wine shop, you know, a wine shop is good if they say, yes, I can actually find you a wine for $10.99. That's great.
Sure.
You know, and they work with you. It's just, you just can't be afraid. You can't
right.
be afraid to listen and
right.
like try to absorb as much information, but also just be like, hey, what is Barbera? I don't know what Barbera is. Can you explain to me, where does
right.
that come from?
Right.
And I've been lucky enough to work with her over the years on just putting together cases like, I want to learn more about Georgian wine. Like,
sure.
tell me more. Or I want to learn specifically about Pinot Gris. I don't know about Pinot Gris.
What is the worst behavior you've witnessed at a wine tasting? Like, do not
oh,
meet this
God.
Person. What have you seen?
People can be really rude.
Yeah.
And especially to the face of winemakers. I know I date a winemaker. I've seen it at tastings with him. I have seen it at wineries that I represent. And I've seen it at wineries that I worked at. The drunker people get, and especially at taste around events, which we all go to or have to attend for different reasons, a lot of the consumers see it as a way to drink a lot. And with drinking a lot, your inhibitions kind of go away.
We've all done that, right?
But when that happens, people can be incredibly rude. And
so tasting events are not, they're not, this is not the place to come get sloshed.
Exactly.
Don't look at it as a free for all.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's one of those professional things too. I know with PR, as we have like junior, you know, staff members, and there's this first time at Feast coming up kind of thing, right?
Oh man.
So there's so many things where you have to, maybe at our level, we, it's kind of second nature at this point.
Like, right.
But you forget that, hey, it's important to tell you at the grand tasting.
Yeah.
Maybe don't just go to every booth and drink everything.
Yeah. Or just don't drink until Sunday afternoon.
Exactly.
You will thank me if you follow that advice.
Oh my God. It's so true. Especially with Feast, when it's such a long, long weekend. It just keeps getting longer, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think people can be incredibly rude.
Right.
And you know, some of the people that think they know a lot and they don't have to be, you know, in any way inebriated, they can be rude as well.
Totally. So don't be a jerk.
Yeah. I think that's the key. Just be nice. Even if you hate it, swallow it.
Yeah.
Just
or smile as you
pour it out.
Very
you can
tasty.
Pour the rest of it out, but like I also, I'm not a fan. Listen, if you're in the trade and you're having to do a trade tasting and you're having to taste around, I totally understand, you know, spitting it out or doing whatever. But I think, you know, if you're right in front of the winemaker, it's, to me, it's rude.
Favorite ridiculous tasting notes. Like when you read a tasting note and you come across a descriptor and your eyes roll back in your head.
There are so many instances of that. That's the problem. I think people get carried away with it. And, you know, people are like, this pairs well with, you know, fresh air. And, you know, and we're like, okay, like, what does that even mean? Like, do you want us to drink this outside, I guess? Like, I don't know. It's, they're weird when they get too outside of the box and try to be lifestyle-y.
Right.
That's when I start to have an issue with it. Like, it just should be a tasting note. It should be, I think it's important to include culinary notes. Like, this pairs well with X, Y, and Z. Because for the average American consumer, they don't know necessarily, like, what a Pinot Noir can work well with.
Right.
That it can go with salmon or pork. Like, it can be seafood or meat-friendly. I think it's important to share that information. But it's not important to, in my opinion, to share what occasions it goes with.
What do you think the average American consumer, like when they're going to pick out wine, because you pick out wine for a few occasions, right? Like either you're like, it's Friday night, or I need something to go with my dinner, or I'm going to a party and I want to bring someone something.
Mm-hmm. Like a hostess gift.
I guess being in the industry, like how, I'm just curious, how do you think people approach the wine section?
Labels.
Yeah, really?
1,000%
Wow.
It's labels and price.
Yeah, it's, price is a big one.
Yeah, so price is probably kind of secondary. Like, they'll see a label and whatever jumps out to them, why people are using, like, bold fonts and colors and all of that stuff is, like, what's flying off the shelves right now. And then they go for price. You know, typically people want to buy for weeknight. It's obviously, like, 15 and under, typically, for a... Like, let's say you're going to a party and you want to bring a hostess gift. You're maybe in like the 25 to 30 range, somewhere in there. Typically, people bring, that's when they buy bubbles.
Yep.
And, you know, a celebratory thing is definitely bubbles. Like a Friday night, you know, you got a raise or you got a promotion, you buy bubbles. I personally believe you can never go wrong with bubbles.
Never.
You can buy it on a Tuesday for $12.99. I don't care.
I love that you take advantage of bubbles on your Alaska Airlines.
Oh my God, I love it.
No, I just, when I see you post that, I think, like, get it. Like, you just get it. So love the moment.
I have to take a moment because Alaska Airlines, and I don't rep them. I don't work with them in any capacity.
They're my favorite. The best.
They're the best. And it was, I have to say, because my job, you do as well, travel so often, to rise the ranks in their elite program is so easy.
It's so easy. And I mean, even before I was, because I travel like every week for work and those miles rack up. But even before I was where I was now, even after the first rank, I'd be on a random flight and they were like, oh, we've upgraded you to first class. And I was like, what?
Yes. That's what happens. I know.
I'm looking around the room. Yes. I'm like, are you Mary Crow? Is there someone else with that name here? And then you get more nuts.
Oh, the whole thing. And like these wonderful meals and like things are served in crystal, you know, like whatever. And it's, I have to say, it is, you feel spoiled rotten and it's wonderful.
Yes.
And no, I mean, I believe in drinking on flights. I'm a nervous flyer. Have been forever. I fly almost every other week. So you'd think it would go away. It doesn't. But there's nothing that a little champagne can't cure.
I love it.
Yeah. So that's
out of the mouth of babes.
Yeah.
Nothing a little champagne can't cure.
I will also give them a big up for doing an amazing Bloody Mary.
And what I love about them is, so if you are in the Northwest and you fly in Alaska, you fly from Seattle to Portland or Seattle to, I don't know, the Tri-Cities.
Sure.
These tiny little flights.
Mm-hmm.
They serve local beer and wine.
It's
and
so
I think
neat.
It's such an awesome way to, for smaller brands mm-hmm. to, you know, get their product out there and people
totally.
Try them out. Because A, people are stoked that an airline is offering a free drink.
Oh, totally.
Like, I'm like, wait, what?
Do yeah. You're like,
this?
Is there...
No, this is... Oh, okay. Yeah. So A, they're stoked about that. And B, they're getting like high quality. These are not the little bottles that come in the 4-pack of
no.
that horrible wine
Mm-mm.
that you know, buy. No, this
right.
is like,
yeah.
this is really good stuff.
Totally. And I have to, I mean, I know they just purchased Virgin America, but their wine program as well is unbelievable. John Bonnet, who now is the head wine writer for Punch, but was the wine writer for San Francisco Chronicle and still writes for them. He's also the author of The New California Wine, which is, if you're starting in the wine world and want a great kind of reference for the natural wine world, especially in the new world, meaning California, the United States in general. They do mention some Oregon and Washington as well in there as just little tidbits. He put together the Virgin America wine program.
Awesome.
And it's that same thing. It's bringing those smaller producers that probably would never have had access.
Right.
And he's making a very curated list specifically for the Virgin America lounges and the first class and business class. But it's really cool. It's like Bedrock and Lioko and just some really cool producers that are just would never have gotten that opportunity.
So you mentioned natural wines, which is a trend that we're seeing.
Yeah.
One, can you explain what that is? And then two, are Oregon producers jumping into this?
Yeah, I will take a stab at defining natural wine. I'm sure my boyfriend will cringe. So natural wine, and again, I encourage people, another pro tip for me is read absolutely everything. Like, you know, me mentioning JonBenet's book, or
I think... Which we will link. I have like 100 links now from this episode, but I will link to everything, all the show notes. We'll get all the links up.
There's another book called Secrets of the Sommeliers that Raj Parr did, who's an amazing somm who's based in California, who now has started two wine labels, which he does Combe, which is in kind of collaboration with Stoltman in Santa Barbara, and he does Sandi wines, which are unbelievable. They make an incredible Chardonnay, and Combe makes a great Pet Nat, which, gosh, I'm throwing out terms that I realize need definitions. But so the new issue of Bon Appetit really gives a great definition of natural wine, and their new wine editor, Marissa Ross, I have to give her credit for this because she's making it more in layman's terms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's wine without manipulation, basically. It's wine with minimal intervention. So people aren't adding, I think people don't realize that people don't realize that the big produced wines typically for preservation reasons, you know, for shipping and all of that good stuff to be shelf kind of stable for a long period of time, have a lot of chemicals added.
So it's like processed food versus...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's eating the tomato versus a can of like tomato sauce that has a bunch of ingredients in it.
Exactly. And so that's a really great way of putting it. It's... I think natural wine is as close to you picking the tomato off the vine and you're eating it.
Right.
That's the goal with natural winemakers is they want to make it as true to the grape and the source as possible and to really harness that essence.
So natural wine, is this kind of what you would have been drinking 100 years ago in Italy and Spain? And, you know, if you lived in a village and your family made the wine, this is very similar to...
Totally. It's what it's really hearkening back to kind of the early days of winemaking. It's, you know, right. they want to get back to, I mean, some people are even doing it in these like small basket presses where gosh. It's kind of ridiculous. I mean,
but this follows like the culinary trend of what we're seeing and how people, you know, going back to vegetables mm-hmm. and like minimal treatment of vegetables and letting that ingredient shine mm-hmm. rather than
all these different chemicals kind of getting in the way of letting that true character of the, you know, whatever, if it's a vegetable or a grape or whatever it is. So natural wine for me has been something that I've become passionate about just through my learnings on wine. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously, I definitely started out with wines that were heavily manipulated because that's what is mass produced and that's what's available.
So really quick side topic, because I just learned this. So a lot of wines they are filtered with gelatin.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not, is this a vegan product or not a vegan product?
Well, so when it's not vegan is when they filter it with egg white.
Interesting.
So a lot of wines, that's definitely something we've been asked as a PR firm for our different wine clients, are your wines vegan?
Yeah.
Majority are not. They're fined with some sort of agent. Yeah. So gelatin or egg whites.
So even though the animal product is not in the final bottle.
It's just been fined and filtered through it. Yeah. So it's been touched by it at some point.
Right.
Majority of wines can't be labeled as vegan.
Same as beer, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Very true.
I just learned this. That was interesting. So then our Oregon wines.
Yes.
Are they following this trend as well? And what are you seeing?
Definitely. I think a lot of Oregon winemakers are getting into the natural wine game just because, A, it's a lot less expensive in a lot of ways.
I bet, yeah.
You know, starting out, you don't need all of these crazy tools and equipment to make your wine. You can just do it in a lot more of a bare bones kind of
tactic. Does this affect, though, a consumer's experience? You buy a bottle of natural wine... Mm-hmm. You know, and then you go back to buy it and the next batch tastes different.
Yeah, and it definitely will. There are going to be bottle variation for sure. I mean, this is, again, because it's not kind of preserved in the way that, you know, if you go back for Rombauer year after year, it's going to taste that way. It's formulaic at this point. So, you know, like a Rombauer Chardonnay or a Napa Chardonnay in general they want consistency.
Absolutely.
Natural wine is not going to be that way. There's going to be, obviously, vintage variation, but there's also going to be bottle variation. Just in the sense that, like, there isn't a lot going into it. So, you know, everything, you know, the strawberry you have yesterday may taste different from the strawberry you had today, kind of thing.
Got it.
It was sweeter yesterday, and today it's a little different, you know. So, it's never going to taste the same, but to me, that's the cool part.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. Like, if you're into your ingredients, and you're into picking up on those things, you're going to enjoy.
Absolutely. I think that's... You never know, in a way, what you're going to get. I mean, obviously, it's going to be somewhat similar to what you had prior, but it's kind of a surprise factor, which I think is neat.
So, who in Oregon, if you're looking for natural wines... I just raised my eyebrows, because we know we're going to mention Andy's wine. But who else besides our favorite natural winemaker?
Yeah, St. Reginald Parish. I'll give a shout-out to Andy Young. And full disclosure,
that's the only natural wine I'll
drink. Yeah. Full disclosure, he is my boyfriend. You know, I really, gosh, there's so many great producers out there. I'm a big fan of Bow and Arrow. Dana and Scott Frank are good friends of mine. And I think they do an amazing job on mm-hmm. their wines. They have an urban winery here in Portland. Kate and Tom at Division. Kate also has a great new label, Gamine, which... I don't know. There's something really feminine, flirty, and fun about her wines. She does...
That's a reflection of her.
Totally. And she's a badass. And she makes a great sparkler, as well as this really beautiful Syrah.
Very natural.
And totally natural.
Awesome.
So highly, highly recommend her stuff. I think Fossil and Fawn also. So Jim Fisher and Jenny Mosbacher make natural wine and really kind of... esoteric, very like kind of heady wines. They're thinkers. Like, they're not your straightforward Pinots.
Right.
Even Andy put it a great way last night. He's like, because we were thinking about what bottle to open last night he flew in from New York. And I was like, oh, we've got some Fossil and Fawn. He's like, no, I want to wait on that when I'm in a good headspace to really think about it.
Yeah.
So that's what I'll say and kind of preface. Before you drink Fossil and Fawn, be in the right headspace for it. Because you really, it's not just like an easy drinking kind of wine. Not to say it's not that it's delicious. It's a great wine.
Right.
But you, natural wines too, I think it kind of goes for all of them. Be open-minded.
Well, so to wrap it up, let's talk about what you are excited in Portland about right now. What are the three things you're excited about in terms of food and drink, or three things that, you know, people who are certainly not new to food, you know,
sure,
because they've been to Pak Pak and they've been to Voodoo.
Yeah.
Where are you telling people that?
Where do they go next kind of thing? What's your next stop? Gosh.
Yeah.
I have to say, those are the questions that whenever we have clients come into town, it's Sam, where do you think they should go? And where do you, you know, all that. This city is so amazing. It has so many options and so many different places to try, like for whatever, if you're a vegan or if you're a steak person or, my number one restaurant, if you're having a big client dinner, if you're having a birthday celebration, there's no better place than St. Jack to me. Especially if you can snag seats at the chef's counter and interact with Aaron Barnett, who I think is, in my opinion, the best chef in Portland. Anything from his burger to his caviar service is ridiculous. Like, totally high-low, whatever you want. He also has a great bistro on the east side that definitely is, like, my neighborhood haunt, La Mole.
Yep.
Great cocktails, too. My God. And St. Jack has just... It's not necessarily natural wine, but he is the bar none best French wine list in Portland. Be prepared to definitely bring your credit card. Like that is a no joke kind of expense, but they do have happy hours in their bar section.
Their happy hour is great.
Totally. And as I mentioned, the hamburgers available then. But yeah, that's like a special occasion.
For sure. Special occasion.
Blow it out.
Clients, promotion, birthday, anniversary.
So fun.
All the things.
If you want to just have a time that you partially don't remember, but remember it was good, go to Tanuki.
Oh, yes. That accurately describes all of my experiences there.
Right? You don't quite remember it.
I remember them being very tasty and a lot of fun.
Yeah, I just think it's one of those places that, I don't know, you really learn a lot about your friends or your date or whomever, because it's adventurous in the sense that, like, it's a prefix. You determine what your price is with the prefix.
Yeah.
It's like $10, $20, or $30.
Yep.
If you end up paying the $30, let me tell you, the food doesn't stop.
No. No, it doesn't. And I don't know how you did it. So we went to Tanuki.
Yeah.
And Sam was able to get them to bring us a second service of the kimchi croissants. Which,
oh my God.
I was a little scared when you asked. I was scared that we would be kicked out because she does do that to people.
Yeah,
but you
Janice.
Did it.
Yeah, no, I did
you
it.
You made those croissants appear.
You know, it's their staff is amazing. You know, Maya Lovelace, who is at May now, used to work there too.
Oh, really? Oh,
funny. And so I've known her through that. And Janice, we really bonded one night. I don't even know what occasion it was, but it was some sort of holiday. And she made us all wear weird furry animal hats. She has weird... I mean, guys, when I say weird, this place is weird.
It is. Yeah, you can be watching like a Japanese horror
porn
movie.
Totally. I mean, it's not safe for children.
Like, no, she doesn't even allow children.
Right, it's 21 and over.
Yep.
The windows are blacked out.
Yeah.
There's like weird red lights.
I would not want to see what it looks like when the lights are
no,
up in there.
No, nor would I.
I think it's like plywood that has just been painted black.
Probably true.
There's like some arcade games.
I know we're probably describing something that sounds really scary right now, but it is.
Well, it is. But the lights are off, so you can't see those things when you get inside.
And you will have fun. Her sake list is crazy. Oh my. And
that's why you don't remember the name.
Yeah. Exactly. Make sure you have a designated driver or Uber, Lyft, whatever. This is definitely not a place you drive. Highly recommend, some sort of car service. And it's, to me, that's quintessential Portland. Like, it's just so funky and weird.
Very true.
That it can only exist here.
Yep.
In terms of, there's so many places here that I'm going to name two other ones that I think especially for women, if you want a great like ladies brunch or ladies lunch, Luce and Navarre are just, they're just everything.
Luce is
it is.
You cannot go there on like, if you are stressed for, this is not a business like lunch, like get out.
No.
They are on Italian time.
Yes. 100%. It is. They don't bother you. They let you relax. I've gone there before and just sat with a notebook and, you know, written things out. And
I cannot time escape flies. The bolognese. I get it at the, or is it the ragu? I don't know.
Yes, yeah, the ragu. Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh.
I love the cappelletti and brodo soup, you know, which is just, oh my God, it's this soup with like these pillowy little cappelletti ravioli things. They're amazing.
The duck or the chicken liver crustini, which I never thought I would ever be ordering. It's so, like, I have to get it every time. I love it.
It's... Yeah, like there's so many things on that menu, and it's, but yes, leisurely lunch. Like this is.
So it's interesting that when did they get the nod from Bon App for best restaurant in America?
Yeah. Like that's it's massive.
Huge.
5 years ago? 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you were in Andrew Knowlton's place when you bestowed that honor upon them, like it's what amazing. Do you think he pulled out of that experience that this really was at that time the best?
I think it's because you feel like you're in Italy. Like, yeah, I mean, honestly, true. Like, there, it feels like you're an Italian cafe, kind of store cafe thing. The whole kind of ambiance is just so relaxing, and the servers are friendly, but they don't bother you. And then they just, the wine list is incredible. It's like you can get, like, every single wine bottle on their list, you can get by the glass.
Yeah.
Which I think is awesome. One of my favorite things. So you don't have to just like completely dive in and be like, I guess I'll have the Barolo or whatever it is. This way you can be like, I'll start with the Verdicchio and then maybe I'll move to the Barbera. And then, you know, you can really pace yourself out in terms of wine. And the servers are incredibly knowledgeable, both about how it'll pair with the food, but also just the wine in general and the producers. And it's really amazing being there. It's just delightful. I don't even, there's no like no music. I don't even think there's like,
I don't know.
I'm trying to think of like anything that really makes it, I don't know, you walk in and it's special. Yeah. It's kind of like Maurice in that way.
My celebrity sighting there, Senator Ron Wyden.
Really?
He was at the table next to us.
Oh my gosh.
Very exciting.
That is.
I know.
Oh, neat.
Right? Love that. And Navarre, I can't understand why, like, the screen door, two blocks down, has a hour-long line out the door.
Which our partners wait in.
It's their favorite, fried chicken. They do have extraordinary fried chicken that you just cannot get anywhere else.
It's true.
But Navarre is, like, this secret. But it's been a secret...
Forever
that everyone's like, hey, guys, the secret's over here.
It's like right down the street.
I feel like everyone is... Every time I talk about that place with people, they're like, why isn't it more busy? I've never waited there.
No, nor have I.
You always walk right
in. If anything, I wait for maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's if you have a bigger party. But if you're two people, you walk right in. There's not even a problem.
It's such a great spot.
And it's just, it's the small plates place that has, again, same thing. So Navarre and Lugier are owned by the same guy. And he has the same kind of ethos when he puts together his wine list is that, again, at this place, you can, every single bottle you can get by the glass, and also a carafe. Like, there are a lot more options at Navarre in terms of the sizes of your pours, which is fun.
So Navarre is Spanish then, or what's
the vibe? I would say it's like a
continental
top.
European kind of mixing in all the influences.
I think so. That's a good, I like that description.
Sure.
Yeah. I go with it. Sense. Perfect. I don't know. It's dreamy. There's something dreamy about it. They're really both great. Dreamy. My friend Jillian, going back to Luce, and I think this is 100% true, the ladies' lunch is 100% accurate, but if you want to up your relationship, she calls Luce the double handhold dinner date, which I agree with.
Oh, when you're like so in love, you have to hold both hands.
Yep, because it's that candlelight, you feel like you're in Italy, and she's totally right. I loved that description, the double handhold dinner date.
All right, so ladies, when you're ready to take it to the next level.
Yep, Luce dinner date, for sure.
And you feel like both hands will be held.
Yeah.
Just stare at each other, Lady and the Tramp style. Get a plate of spaghetti.
And then go down the street to Angel Face for a drink after.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that bar.
Yeah, Lindsay and I talked about that.
Oh, yeah.
Bar.
It's dreamy.
I feel like I am not cool enough to pull it off.
Oh, you can totally do it. It's, I feel like any, like.
We already heard me talk about an episode two, but yeah, I mean, I get it. It's awesome. It's a cool bar. It's awesome what they do.
Yeah,
I don't think I'm their target. This has been so much fun.
Oh my God, I loved it.
Me come talk to you about food and wine.
This is a ball. I enjoyed it.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Mary.
clear your throat.
Do all your vocal exercises.
The big black bear bit the big black bug, and the big black bug led the look.
So I'm recording.
Oh, that's the beginning? Great.
Good.
All right. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to almost winter in Portland.
This is winter,
right?
Well, solstice hasn't officially happened yet. That's next week. We're like the latest of late fall right now. The final countdown of fall.
I think when there's frost on the ground,
that should count as winter.
It's winter.
I think December should count, just because all the artwork for the holidays, it's like snow everywhere.
That's true.
That seems like winter.
Yeah. So it's funny because this makes me think about my feelings towards how the seasonal produce goes in and out at the farmer's market, and how like when we recorded last, like kind of like late or early fall, I tend to get annoyed because there's like eggplant, peppers, tomatoes, butternut squash. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not ready for
not ready
squash.
For it. Yeah.
Or at the end of October, there is still eggplant and peppers, and I'm like, guys, get out of here.
You're done.
It's time for squash.
We buy the most peppers in October when I think everyone else is like,
it's crazy.
I'm done with these.
I don't understand. I would think like the ripening time for them is not October.
It is.
Well, you're wrong because it is. But you know, I feel like that is like nightshades to me are very much
summer.
Yeah, July, yeah. August, September. So mm-hmm. It's like confusing. And then when you're at the market, you're staring at this like cornucopia and your mind starts to short circuit because you can't figure out how to make like one thing with everything.
When I see sometimes those squash and wintry things coming in, I like look at them and I'm like, why did they even bring those? They're not going to sell them.
Everyone's still buying for containers of cherry tomatoes.
Yeah. I'm like judging their market stand.
Well, so the only market that's open right now is the Portland State University Farmers Market, which it's chilly. It was so cold there last week.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because when we were thinking about, usually when we're here, when we're recording these, we have just been at the market, but we haven't even gone to the market because it's
so cold.
And we've just had people deliver to us. I'm like, hey, can you come drop us off? Because I like don't even want to do it.
I just feel bad when we go because I'm skipping past all of our vendor friends that are out there freezing in the cold.
And you feel guilty.
I'm just here for a minute. Gonna go get in the hot car.
Later.
Yeah. So now we're seeing some unusual players pop up, like today's topic, kohlrabi.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm not sure about kohlrabi.
Like, you don't know what it is or you don't know if you like it?
Both. Cool. I don't trust it.
Tell me. I like this. Why? Tell me why.
Is it chicory? Is that right?
It's
is it
a cabbage? Brassica.
Yeah. It's a brassica.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even picture what we're talking about.
Well, I've heard it described as like an octopus head, kind of has the same shape as an octopus head.
Did I describe this?
No, you did not.
Who's your describer?
It's German for small cabbage turnip.
Oh.
Like okay. I said, I don't trust anything about
right?
that.
Right? Well, what's funny is when I was researching kohlrabi, apparently it's like your most versatile player. It can weave a bob out of just about anything, any kind of preparation, raw, roasted, steamed, all of that. And yet no one uses it.
I know. I think people just don't know what to do with it. And it's not really sold in grocery stores.
No. Nope. Or if which it is, if they've been there for a
it's
while.
It's been there.
They're starting to get wilty.
Yeah. So I think it's hard. But it is really... So you can eat the greens.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're really good. They sort of almost taste like broccoli leaves, don't you think?
Yeah, because it's a brassica.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you can eat the bulb.
Yep.
Okay. But you have to peel it.
Yeah.
And then you also kind of have to peel a little bit more because there's the, it's really leathery on the outside, or it can be, not in a bad way, in like a new leather kind of way, not old leather kind of way. I was like, that didn't come out
like
right.
Like a lamb leather.
Like a lamb leather. A supple leather. But then there's like another layer right under that, and you want to make sure you get to like the white. So it's kind of like if you peel your broccoli stems. And okay. If you do that, you'll notice, like, the first time you peel it, you can still see it's a little, like, green. It looks a little, like, celery stringy.
Extreme.
And then you, like, you peel it again, and that's when you get to that uber kind of whitish green. And that's what you chop up and throw in things.
Okay. Well, I have a question for yes. the two of you. And it deals with the seasons, mm-hmm. because I spoke to three different chefs with this ingredient in mind, and all three of them do something in the fresh salad realm.
Yeah.
But it's cold weather. So my question right. for you is, right. what's your salad frequency when we get into winter? Are you more stews and roasted dishes? Or are you like, I crave a salad even though mm-hmm. it's 12 degrees outside?
I'm kind of like the ladies laughing with salad pictures that you see on the internet.
I've never seen what you're talking about.
Really, if you Google like salad, generally what comes up is a photo of a woman like holding a bowl of salad, oh. like laughing like she's just seen like the most hilarious thing ever. And it's a whole meme because wow. it's the dumb, like, who is laughing while they're looking at a salad? Usually you're like, I'm eating this so I can eat some pepperdell later today and not feel bad about it.
I don't think I've ever held a bowl of salad and laughed.
Google
but now
it.
I want to.
Google it. And so I laugh like, this bowl of kale is hilarious.
That's all I want to look at now.
Yeah. We'll be right back. I eat salad year round. I do. I love it. I am a big fan. Like every time I go to the farmer's market, I get a bunch of kale, and I do like a chiffonade on Tuscan kale, and then I have that, and then I have shredded red cabbage, and then I have just romaine. And so every day before work, I'll reach into the fridge and like grab okay. those, throw it in a big Tupperware, add cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, like whatever I have. And then that is, it's like a trough sometimes, like a huge bowl where I'm just sitting at my desk with a fork eating. So I do eat yeah. a lot of salads. But okay. your question made me, because when I was thinking about it too, I don't do a lot of like composed salads at home. And a lot of the recipes that I saw for kohlrabi were okay. very much like your cheese, your nut, your fruit, your kohlrabi that's been cut into matchsticks and your, you know, butter lettuce. And mm-hmm. like, those are not my kind of salads.
Gotcha.
What about, are you a salad eater in the winter?
Well, what happens, and I mean, Dirk already knows because we eat together every meal, but yeah. We'll eat a lot of burritos and pizza during the winter because it's so quick and we're just working so hard. And then all of a sudden I'll be like, Dirk, I need salad in my life. I need vegetables. Stat.
Yeah.
And then we'll make big, huge, you know, and this is a nice time to be able right. to buy like all the kale and chard and all the greens. Yeah. And so, but it's like an emergency
yeah.
when I need it.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like salad
That's
all day.
Yeah. After vacation, like you come back to the emergency, like steamed kale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. what I found interesting about kohlrabi that I hadn't really considered is steamed, it can really add just volume to anything like tacos, burritos, quiche,
what?
Frittata. Yeah, because it just kind of serves, like, almost like the same texture as, like, steamed cauliflower. You could even use it if you're doing any kind of, like, cream of soup, like cream of potato, cream of mushroom, like, puree it in there. Because it has such
a
neutral flavor that,
I could put it into hot
yeah.
sauce.
Ooh. Uh-oh. Challenge.
New sauce.
New sauce. Which I still think you owe me a hoisin sauce. I don't think you haven't.
Oh,
you said you would
yeah.
take on the challenge. Next
January.
Year. Next
January.
Year. Plumps. Yeah, January's next year. And then one other thing I wanted to mention about kohlrabi. I'm just thinking about, I bought the David Tanis cookbook, The Market. Mm-hmm. I'm totally blanking on Market Cooking, I think. And I'm literally on page one in his introduction. Paragraph
Good
one.
Place to start.
Good place to start. Where he talks about, like, the approach of, like, market-based cooking is you go to the market, you buy what's fresh, right? But it really requires a lot of culinary skill in knowing what to do with vegetables and all these ingredients. And I think we get so attached to, like, tomatoes are in season, and therefore I'm going to make this tomato X, or it's butternut squash season, I can't wait to make this butternut squash tart. And then kohlrabi, apparently,
you can use any which way, but no one's going to the market and is like, kohlrabi, I'm going to make a kohlrabi tart. So I feel like because we're not, like, we've reversed it to get really excited about, like, the specific item that we're going to make with this star ingredient instead of, here's a star ingredient and here are all the things I know how to make and I could just fold it right in. So I'm excited. I'm super excited to try mixing it up with kohlrabi. Yeah. You can also zoodle it.
Zoodle.
Hello.
Wow. We've never zoodled anything.
Guys.
Yes, to zoodle.
And you've never laughed with salad?
No. Oh, we have so many things to do.
2018 is going to be great.
So, preserving.
Well, so I don't have a lot of tips for preserving, but one thing that I will suggest is, because you won't really find it in canning books. Mm-hmm. There's not... I've never seen any. I've never seen any. But I do have a suggestion, and that is that the pH level, because they're similar, is the same as jicama. And so if you have a recipe for jicama, which there are a lot of, like, a lot of pickled jicama, or they'll do, like, sweetened, sour pickles. But you can switch them, the two things out. So you could do kohlrabi instead of...
I saw some recipes for kohlrabi kimchi.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, kimchi now, I think, has... we've taken it to mean, like, a pickling style for anything, right? Where in, like, Korea, kimchi is very... Like, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And then there are all these kimchis under it. But now we're like, you can kimchi that. Yeah. And so applying the basic, you know, the garlic, the gochujang pepper, the salt... And doing a quick kimchi pickle.
That's a great idea. And also with the greens, you can do that. Like, you can just eat the greens in a salad, but you could do it like sauerkraut kind of, or kimchi, where you just are... You wouldn't want to let it ferment probably too long because it might get kind of slimy, but you could do it just like an overnight ferment.
Yeah. There's one kimchi that I love to make. It's the white radish kimchi where it's cubed.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of just like... ferments in your cupboard for like a day and a half before you get it into the fridge, so it's not very long and it's super tasty. I think that'd be a great application. I did see some like quick in the fridge pickles, mustard seed, basic quick pickle.
Yeah, pie. I mean, you could. It's a great, vehicle for pickles, of course. But.
Right. Just that it's so firm, like the texture will really stand up to. Oh, one other thing that just reminded me, I don't know why, because it's not firm at all, is again, with the steaming, you could use it in a mash. Like a lot of people like celery root mash this time of year, and so you could do like a kohlrabi potato mash, kohlrabi potato mash, did I say that? Cauliflower, all the things.
Could you rice it like cauliflower rice?
I don't know. I've never.
Or you just pulse it in the blender a couple times and then steam.
You'd have to because the
be peeling a lot. Yeah,
it would probably be too tough to start with. You'd have to cook it and then do it.
Well, I don't want to do that.
You won't do that.
Look for kohlrabi rice in your grocer's frozen section soon.
Probably.
Not ever.
No.
No. Won't happen. All right. So how are chefs using this on the menu?
Yeah. So the first person I heard back from was Rick Cincarelli from Lardo and Grassa, and he said over at Grassa they're doing a kohlrabi and apple slaw for fried oysters.
Yum. That sounds
super
good.
Fresh. That's actually not on the menu yet. That's coming up in a couple weeks, I think. So.
And that's people use jicama and a slaw a lot, so that's like a good just swap out for kohlrabi.
Yeah.
So. Are you guys a grated slaw or a matchstick slaw?
I like matchstick.
I like matchstick. I'm not a huge slaw person, so it really comes down to what's binding the slaw together.
I will never eat a mayonnaise
slaw.
No way.
Madness.
Vinegar-based slaw only.
Yes, I agree.
I love mayonnaise.
Oh!
It's not true. I love veganaise. Because I can't have the egg.
Not even.
It's not even a thing.
Creamy, vinegary, delicious. We're getting off topic. But the matchstick for me, I feel like I love the look. And I like, eventually, once it gets into my mouth, how it feels. But it's challenging to get on your fork and in your mouth. Sometimes they're
you have to be small.
Yeah.
Smaller.
Yeah.
I mean,
you have to have dirt do it.
But the shredded, you can just shovel. Just shovel right on in.
Yeah. And the shredded just reminds me of, like, a
vegetable and a box grater. It's not very subtle. It's very
It looks like
clunky.
Salad bar-y.
Yeah. The grated carrot when I was a kid where I was like, who put the sawdust on my seat? Like, I didn't want that.
Yeah. It reminds me of Kentucky Fried Chicken and their coleslaw, which is like my favorite thing as a child growing up.
Whoa.
we talked about Vienna sausages last time, so I feel like I'm clean about my love for Kentucky
this
Fried
is a safe
Chicken.
Place.
Not the chicken, the coleslaw. The coleslaw and the biscuits. That's all I was interested in.
Do you still eat them?
Oh, God, no. Oh. Gross. No.
Have you tried the coleslaw?
Wait, Vienna sausages or the biscuits and coleslaw?
Both. I want to know.
No, none.
I
want to
know the truth.
Ew, gross.
No.
Mm-mm. I'm just curious if they changed it ever. Like,
yeah,
if you
that's
saw
what I was wondering.
Now,
if it was different now,
be like,
than
this
when you were a kid.
I don't know. I like it because it's all like everything is equally kind of chopped into bits and then tossed with a mayonnaise-based dressing, and so everything it goes nicely onto a spoon and right in your mouth. Mm. Crunch, crunch, crunch. Swallow. Go back for more.
Thanks for breaking down eating.
Here's how you eat.
In case you're curious, food goes in your spoon.
Life lessons.
This is what we have to. We have children. We have to explain these things.
It's true. It's true all the time.
Okay. So and the wait. So the oysters would sit on top of that, or that would come in accompaniment. You said fried oysters.
I think
it would
be on top of the fried oyster, and then you just have a small window of time to eat that before it would get.
Yep.
Next is Kristen Murray Maurice. She's doing an apple and kohlrabi salad with a Gruyere dressing and pickled mustard seeds.
Ooh.
Yeah, so she probably, I'm guessing, mandolin.
What's a Gruyere dressing?
I don't know. She is a wizard when it comes to dressings and things. She did
a
cumin seed dressing on a carrot salad years ago. And I still think about it all the time.
One of the things I know with kohlrabi, like, and I feel like turnips, this happens too. Like, it's really beautiful to shave these things, but again, like, thinking about it actually on your fork and eating it, and like a large round disc is very challenging to eat.
I get tricked by every cookbook that has a picture of shaved vegetables in a salad.
Me
I'm
too.
Like, that's beautiful, and then you try to eat it.
And
you're like, this is crazy. I need a knife now. Yeah, it's a blanket of a vegetable. And then lastly, PDX Food Story All-Star, Chef Aaron Barnett of St. Jack and Lemoyne. I don't think I've mentioned him recently. They do a lightly marinated steelhead with Granny Smith creme fraiche, kohlrabi, basil, celery leaves, and a smoked scallop. And that is a salad, and it is very composed.
Yeah,
oh,
we're looking
beautiful.
At it.
Yeah, let's go eat it.
It's gorgeous.
Immediately.
Gorgeous.
We should, I would like to thank all of the chefs that answer Dirk's texts at 2 o'clock in the morning. And it's really not his fault. It's my fault, because I usually tell him the night before that we're recording the next day. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thanks. I also want to say thank you, because a new thing has started where, rather than just replying with a sentence, chefs are sending me pictures of the salads and dishes. And that's really awesome to be able to sort of visualize what I'm talking about. I wouldn't have pictured this beautiful salad, which maybe I'll put the salad up when this episode comes out so people can see it.
Yeah, and Mary can put it on the Instagram.
The Instagram.
There it is.
I mean, it started.
It's 2018.
It's going to be big, guys. It's going to be big.
Kohlrabi sauce and Instagram.
What do you think Matthew Todd Garrison does with these? Do you think he dries them out and powders them? Kohlrabi powder?
I bet he does the greens.
It's been interesting to watch their value add develop. And like what you see at the market.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It is.
It's really fun.
Yeah. And to see people like they're in the morning like shopping the powders and sauces and things. Like people are into it. Because it's one thing to make it and you just have it.
Yeah.
And it's another thing to see people showing up with the intent to
There was some buy those things. Crazy stuff at their booth last week.
Did we talk about the ranch powder?
What?
Yeah. So I think he sold them all immediately because
it's ranch.
It's ranch powder. So he did all of the things that would normally go into the ranch dressing packet, but with their vegetables and stuff.
What?
And then you just add it to whatever sour cream or something. But it's like the powder in a jar.
Dreamy.
Or veganaise.
Veganaise.
Oh my God.
Yep. Yeah. Look for it at the market. I think he has it.
Crazy.
Right.
Well, here's to winter vegetables.
Yay!
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
All right, that's it. That's the show. Thank you so much for listening. As always, please email me your thoughts at pdxfoodstories@gmail.com. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with a new PDX food story and a new fresh at the farmer's market product to discover. Until then, have a great week.